Welcome to Simply Scottish, a podcast of all things Scottish, with music, features, interviews, and more, on the web at www.simplyscottish.com.
Welcome to Simply Scottish, the half-hour show of Scottish culture, history, and music. I'm your host, Andrew McDermott. Thanks for listening today. Our opening music came from Scottish band Shugle Nifty, a song called McConnell's Rant. We'll hear more from them shortly. On this episode, Scotland in the United Kingdom, a look back at over 300 years of history. We'll explore how and why the Union came to be, and the pros and cons of this relationship as it relates to Scotland. Find other episodes of Simply Scottish on our website, simplyscottish.com. The show is also available on iTunes, and is syndicated 6 days a week on the Celtic Radio Network at celticradio.net. Keep up with the show via social media. You can find us at facebook.com/simplyscottish or twitter.com/simplyscottish. We're also on Pinterest and the Scottish social network Kiltr at kiltr.com, K-I-L-T-R.com. Let's start with some more music. This is Shugle Nifty again with Up All Night. Thank you. In 2014, the people of Scotland make an historic decision. Their answer to the question, should Scotland be an independent country, will have far-reaching effects in Scotland, throughout the United Kingdom, and around the world for generations to come. Today, we pause to consider the historic union between Scotland and England. Why did the nations come together in the first place? What factors influenced the decision? How has the union made things better? Or worse? And finally, what will things be like if Scotland is no longer part of the United Kingdom? So buckle your seatbelts and hold on. We're off on a ride through 400 years of history. If you stick with us through it, you'll gain a clear perspective on the origins of what British Prime Minister David Cameron has recently called the greatest merger in history. The relationship between Scotland and England has been a long, sometimes peaceful, often troubled one. The origins of Scotland as an independent nation can be traced back to the 9th century with the founding of the Kingdom of Alba under Kenneth MacAlpin. Around the same time, Anglo-Saxon kingdoms battled each other for control of the southern half of Britain. King Athelstan of Wessex is generally regarded as the first king of a unified England, beginning in AD 927. Throughout the Middle Ages, both countries contended with civil wars and conflict with other nations and cultures, including the Vikings and the Normans. Because both kingdoms occupied the same island, they seemed destined to have a shared history and a close relationship. A number of English kings had a thirst for conquest, notably Edward I, known as the Hammer of the Scots. After subjugating Wales in the late 13th century, he and his son Edward II attempted to conquer the north, but thanks to the efforts of William Wallace and King Robert the Bruce, they were ultimately unsuccessful. The bond between the two countries would grow in other ways, though, including through royal blood. The union between the two countries had its roots in one king in particular, King James VI of Scotland. In 1603, Queen Elizabeth of England died unmarried and childless, and the crown passed to the next available heir, Cousin James, who became King James I of England as well. The difficulty of ruling two realms with two courts and two parliaments was immediately brought to bear on James, and he sought to make things easier for himself by unifying the two states. He decreed a change in his official title, to King of Great Britain. In 1604, he ordered the creation of a British flag, combining the Cross of St. George and the Cross of St. Andrew. Still today, this flag is known as the Union Jack, Jack being short for Jacobus, the Latin form of James. His other passion was supervising a new English translation of the Bible, but that's a different story, which we discuss in a separate episode. After James VI and I died in 1625, things got pretty messy on the road to union. Between 1638 and 1653, all three kingdoms of the British Isles were involved in civil war and conflict with each other. During this time, Oliver Cromwell declared England a commonwealth and annexed Scotland and Ireland into a union with a single parliament, backed by force. In 1660, the individual monarchies were restored under Charles II. After a brief reign from James VII and II, the Glorious Revolution of 1688 saw him deposed due to religious differences with his opponents, and his elder daughter Mary and her husband William III took his place. This change would be very significant in the decades that followed, both before and after union. Since the chief claim to the throne in this era was that of the Stuarts, many supporters of the Stuart rulers, known as Jacobites, would not accept the Protestant rule of William and Mary. Several rebellions would be waged in an effort to restore the House of Stuart to the throne. Fear of a Jacobite rise to power is one reason William III and his supporters encouraged union between the two countries. As the 17th century drew to a close, it seemed the two countries were closer than ever to uniting as one state. In a few minutes, the Acts of Union and beyond. First, here's music from Scottish folk band Braybrook. Poet Alan Ramsay was born in 1684. As a young poet, he was sympathetic to the Jacobite cause and was a founding member of a literary society in Edinburgh. This is Braybrook singing his poem, Lochaber No More.
Farewell to Lochaber, farewell, my Jean. where heartsome with her I have many days been. For Lochaber no more, Lochaber no more, we'll maybe return to Lochaber no more. These tears that
You're listening to Simply Scottish. At the turn of the 18th century, a number of individual events conspired to bring about union between Scotland and England. In the late 1690s, a Scottish plan to establish a colony on the Isthmus of Panama failed due to poor planning, disease, and lack of provision. Between a quarter and half of Scotland's money had backed the scheme, leaving many nobles and landowners more financially vulnerable and therefore less resistant to a union with England that could help rehabilitate lost wealth. Meanwhile, a battle of the bills ensued between the two national parliaments. In 1701, the English Parliament passed the Act of Settlement, decreeing that the throne would pass from James VII and II's daughter Anne to the Protestant line of Sophia of Hanover and her heirs. The Scottish Parliament responded with the Act of Security, saying Scotland would not adopt the same royal successor unless freedom for its crown, parliament, religion and trade were protected. Knowing full well the extent of Scotland's financial woes at the time, Westminster then proceeded to issue two laws in early 1705, one for a full union with free trade area and single parliament, and the other an aliens bill that threatened to ban all Scots imports into England unless Scots agreed to negotiate for a union and accept the Hanoverian line of succession. After some back and forth in the Scottish Parliament, enough support was raised for the union, and in 1706 commissioners from both parliaments met to arrange the terms. It took them only 3 days to wade through all the issues, from the standardisation of weights and measures to parliament representation. There would be 16 Scottish peers in the House of Lords and 45 members of Parliament in the Commons. A seal of Great Britain would replace the great seals of Scotland and England. Protections for the Scottish legal system and its royal boroughs were added. The freedom of the Kirk, the Scottish Church, was left untouched. During the autumn and winter of 1706, both parliaments debated the Articles of Union. At Westminster, objections were raised, but the opposition vote was never high enough to stop ratification. In the Scottish Parliament, the Articles received support from the Court Party, with opposition from the Country Party, which included the Duke of Hamilton, Lord Belhaven, and Andrew Fletcher of Saltoun. Fletcher, addressing Parliament, delivered strong words against the Union. "Let no man say that it cannot be proved that the English court has ever bestowed any bribe in this country. For they bestow all offices and pensions. They bribe us and are masters of us at our own cost. We have neither heart nor courage, though we want not the means, to free ourselves." Indeed, much money was spent by English politicians in the form of honours, appointments, pensions and other expenses to secure enough support in the Scottish Parliament for the Articles to pass. And pass they did, despite widespread opposition and unrest around Scotland from the lower Scottish classes, including violent demonstrations outside Parliament House in Edinburgh. 96 petitions were presented against the Union, but they went largely ignored and failed to sway the result. By passing the Articles, the Scottish Parliament was voting itself out of existence. On May 1, 1707, after years of discussion and debate, England and Scotland became a single state, the United Kingdom of Great Britain. Celebrations ensued in London, not so much in Scotland. In 1708, the Scottish Privy Council was abolished. Scots were upset at new taxes imposed on basic commodities, which led to occasional attacks on officials. Jacobites took advantage of the strife, promising to regain Scottish liberty and restore Scotland's Parliament. Eventually things would settle down, and the people of Scotland would resolve themselves to their new neighbours, even rising to achieve great things as part of the United Kingdom. But before it got better, it would get worse. An uprising in 1715 began when the Earl of Mar drew up plans for a Jacobite attack, mobilising 16,000 men. After a handful of battles, the Jacobites lost ground and the initiative was lost. Other risings followed, culminating in the Rising of 1745. The young pretender Prince Charles Edward Stuart arrived in Scotland from France and rallied several thousand men. They marched on Edinburgh and as far into England as Derby before turning back toward the Highlands. They were defeated at the Battle of Culloden in 1746, where instead of preferred guerrilla warfare, the Jacobites engaged in direct conflict. Within half an hour, 2,000 Highlanders had been cut down by government gunfire, and many others injured. Government troops hunted down Jacobites who fled the battle. Soon after, Parliament passed laws outlawing clan colours and arms. Laws undermining land ownership and titles of clan chiefs effectively destroyed the clan system. It was disaster for the Highlands, but many others around Scotland and England were relieved. With the Jacobite threat over, many in the United Kingdom turned their attention to building wealth. Internal problems began to be overshadowed by events in other parts of the British Empire. A British identity began to take shape, and advancements in technology brought change and increased prosperity. Next, we'll conclude with a brief look at Scotland's success within the UK during the 19th and 20th centuries. Here's music now from the Green Tracks Recordings album The King Has Landed, Songs of the Jacobite Risings. This is Robin Lang with The Summer of 46.
Summer was a long one, always on the run, moving through the moonlit night, resting in the sun. Say that you were cheerful, like a child in chasing play, or a gambler guessing recklessly when someone else will pay. Through the western highlands, round the western isles, an adventure trail through beauty over countless weary miles. Slipping like a shadow into legend out of chance, watching for the tall, ghostly sailing ships from France. We are all young pretenders, looking for a sign, on a troubled journey through the landscape of the mind. We're looking to the future, trying hard to find a pathway and a promise and the hope of better times. You say that you were happy, always keen to take a dram, a bottle, the companion always nearest to your hand. Perhaps to dull the memory and take away the sound, the cries of young men dying on the blood-stained ground. That summer must have changed you in fundamental ways. It formed the pattern and the script for your remaining days. Some men are most attracted to a cause that can't be won. Life has many flickering ghosts to make us hide and run. We are all young pretenders, looking for a sign, on a troubled journey through the landscape of the mind. We're looking to the future, trying hard to find a pathway and a promise and the hope of better times.
If you're enjoying the music on today's show, enter our monthly music giveaway for your chance to win a Scottish album of your choice from a catalogue of over 4,000, courtesy of MusicScotland.com. Enter online at our website, simplyscottish.com. At the dawn of the 19th century, Scotland was becoming a fast-growing part of the British economy. The Industrial Revolution brought urban growth. King George IV paid a state visit to Scotland, the first by a ruling monarch since 1650. The visit was orchestrated to boost support for the crown in Scotland. That the king came dressed in full Highland dress served to emphasise this point. The visit was part of a move toward romanticising Highland life, and it came even as Highlanders continued to suffer with mass immigration due to an era of forced eviction of Highland families known as the clearances. A number of Scots moved to England to follow the transfer of political and economic power that resulted from the Union. And the expanding British Empire presented many Scots with opportunities to share their talents and dreams abroad. A large number of Scottish soldiers fought in the defence of Britain. As part of the United Kingdom, the people of Scotland had unparalleled access to trade of goods as well as of ideas. Output from Scottish intellectuals, philosophers, inventors, scientists and doctors bloomed. Scotland became an industrial and economic powerhouse, the core of the British enterprise. Gradually, support for the monarchy returned to Scotland, particularly during the reign of Queen Victoria, who made numerous trips to Scotland via new train routes. Throughout the 19th century and into the 20th, the Scots became experts at retaining a strong sense of national identity while committing wholeheartedly to a united kingdom. It's not surprising, though, that after a while, Scots would start wanting more local control of affairs. The Scottish Office was established in 1885 as a department of the UK government and headed up by the Secretary of State for Scotland. As the 20th century progressed, calls for Home Rule brought about the National Party of Scotland, which later became the Scottish National Party. By 1950, the Scottish Covenant, a petition requesting a Scottish legislature within the UK, had received over 2 million signatures. In 1967, the SNP's Winnie Ewing won the previously safe Labour Party seat of Hamilton, bringing the party to national prominence. A referendum on a devolved assembly was held in 1979, and although a slight majority voted in favour of it, not enough of the electorate voted yes to approve the measure. Another devolution referendum came in 1997, where a majority voted in favour of a Scottish Parliament with tax-varying powers. This was delivered in 1999, when Scotland saw the return of its Parliament after 292 years. The Scottish National Party continued to see gains as they pushed for full independence. In 2007, they became the largest party in the Scottish Parliament, and in 2011, in a landslide victory, they won an overall majority of seats. This allowed them to deliver on their campaign promise to issue a new referendum, this time asking the people of Scotland if they wanted Scotland to be an independent country. As we see from history, Scotland as part of the United Kingdom has achieved great success, despite periods of internal struggle. Today, there are two futures for Scotland. One includes continuing as part of the United Kingdom, perhaps with even more devolved powers. The other is becoming an independent nation again, joining the world community as a sovereign state for the first time in 300 years. There are pros and cons to both options, and the best choice will come from carefully weighing up the costs as well as the benefits. That's what the people of Scotland have been doing for the better part of 2 years. Now, it's decision time. That's all for this episode of Simply Scottish. Find more on our website, along with music playlists and links to further resources. That's at www.simplyscottish.com. I'll leave you with a song called Crofting Counties from Blazing Fiddles. I'm Andrew McDermott. Join me again next time for more of All Things Scottish.
Simply Scottish is hosted and produced by Andrew McDermott. Show content, copyright, Simply Scottish Media. All music is used with consent of copyright holders. Continue your Simply Scottish experience at simplyscottish.com. Thanks for listening.